All right, boys, just listen up for a sec. Can you hear that?
Mm-hmm.
How does that sound make you feel? Give me some adjectives.
It's nice. It's kind of like reassuring. Steady.
That sounds like a very accurate kind of... I really like the sound of that mechanism.
It's very precise, isn't it?
Yeah. It also makes me feel like I should be somewhere that I'm not. Like I'm in a rush or something.
What have
I
forgotten?
Kind of running late. But it does sound very nice.
I think all of that is very valid, boys. But let me tell you, this is the sound of a British-designed mechanical timepiece from the talented team at Marlowe Watch Company, sponsors of this episode. And with Marlowe, each collection is influenced by a historical story of inspiring human endeavour. Now, I've spent some time at their HQ recently because, well, I'm curious about mechanical timekeeping and also how things work. And I can tell you that there is so much very pleasing attention to detail that goes into each and every watch design. Now, these guys are serious about their watches, and you can tell by looking at some of the watch reviews online. I mean, the words quality and value come up time and again. Visit marlowewatchcompany.com to see for yourself. Marlowe Watch Company, time well spent, which I also like to think could be said for this podcast.
Two red buttons on the screen. One shuts it off, one records. Okay, it's 50-50.
Right, first things first, I wanted to issue a frank and complete apology for the slight mess up with publication of last week's episode. It is entirely my fault. So any early birds who felt that they were catching the worm and listening to the episode within a couple of hours of it being published would have noticed that it was just Jono's track that you were listening to. There's no music. There's no Tommy and I kind of giving context to anything.
It wasn't just so bad, was it?
Yeah. It was great. It's a real improvement.
There's a lot of silence, long silences.
Long silences. I apologise for that. I hope if you were one of those early downloaders that you did go back and listen to it and that your faith has been restored. Sorry about that. It won't happen again.
Maybe.
Here's the podcast. Something that I love about the sketch that I noticed when I took a closer look when I was skizzing through is that there's a bum. Jono's included an ass in one of his sketches of the guy running around naked. And that was a surprise to me, and I loved it.
My dad does this a lot because he goes, and then he has to look, and my sister's the same. They have to look at a bright light, and then they'll either sneeze or they won't sneeze.
Yeah.
Why is that, Jono?
A terrific, giant, old, circular, grey Scottish stone throwing top.
You've got to look at the sketch for this one.
So what I'm trying to work out is, A, if you're just winding me up on this podcast.
It's a sketch!
Because you guys do a lot of exercise.
Right, yeah, good. Right? Glad to bring this up.
And so really burn through your beats.
Well, this is a concern. Hello and welcome to Sketchplanations, the podcast, where the door is always open, where you can check in at any time, where the showers are hot, the beds are cosy, and where breakfast is served until late into the morning, but with a hard finish at 11:30. I mean, come on, a lion's all well and good, but let's not waste the day, guys. I'm Rob Bell, and this week's episode comes to you slightly differently, because sat immediately to my left and to my right, and not on a screen perched in front of me on my desk, are, respectively, John O'Hay and Tom Pellero. We're in the same room, guys.
Yeah!
Good afternoon.
First time ever.
Recording. Yeah, we've been in the same room before. A few
good point.
Before.
Good
to
point.
Be clear.
Thanks, Tommy. As it turns out, being in the same room together brings about a couple of technical difficulties.
Significant. An hour's worth, potentially.
Crikey, is it really?
It is. Okay.
Who'd have thought? It does allow for a different type of communication, though, doesn't it?
Yeah. I can poke you, for example.
Well, there's that.
Kind of communication.
Because screen, you know, when... And we've talked about this before in the podcast, that, you know, you... Because we're so used to it now with Zoom calls and meetings online and everything. But you can't beat being in the same room.
It's brilliant. It's really cool.
But I'm aware as well, it might sound a bit different as well. It might sound like we're in a bigger room because we're not all in the smallest rooms of our house, surrounded by pillows and everything else that we do to try and improve the acoustics
with
as much as we can.
Microphones 3 inches from our nose as they usually are.
I mean, I guess what the listeners don't know is that we've worked quite hard on trying to make what we record sound as good as we possibly can, right? It's not come easy.
We have tried. Still getting there. Where are these professionals when we need them?
And you've tried incredibly hard to get past the awful microphones that certainly I've had along the way.
Obviously, there are some downsides. We talked about technical issues, but we all actually have to wear trousers as well now instead of being at home when, you know, it doesn't really matter what you got on the bottom half.
Dress up specially for a podcast, what?
And the other thing, it's your birthday, Tom.
Yeah, what better way to spend a birthday?
Happy birthday.
It's slightly disconcerting because you keep looking at me when you're talking to me. Usually it's like,
I'm not used to that.
It's
like, hang on.
It's very lovely, thank you.
Okay, well, look, we need to get going with this week's sketch discussion in earnest, because not only do we have a deadline to be out of this room, we also potentially have quite a lot to get through. Because this week, we're doing our first ever bumper pack quickfire episode. This week, instead of concentrating on one topic, we're going to get through as many sketches as we can that fit the theme, those we found the most surprising. Yeah. Yeah. Now, we've each spent a little bit of time this week browsing through the collection of hundreds of Jono sketches to come here today armed with examples of where, I guess, our reactions were along the lines of, oh, I didn't know that. And, what? That can't be true. Or, I've been getting that wrong my entire life. We'll list all of the sketches that we cover in the episode description, and depending on which podcast player you use, you should be able to follow links directly to those sketches on sketchplanations.com so you can check them out a little bit further. And so that you can see them there in front of you as we go through the episode, if you like. And I'd recommend doing that if possible, because, well, they're all brilliant. But understandable if not, if you're perhaps listening to this whilst you're driving or operating heavy machinery. In fact, you probably shouldn't be listening to a podcast if you are operating heavy machinery. Stop. Do your work. Listen to us when you're finished.
I love that whole operating heavy machinery.
It's such like, a standard
how
phrase.
How often does that actually come up? Yeah, I'm driving my JCB. Well, then maybe you are. And I love driving JCBs. That is my idea of a great weekend.
Digger land.
It doesn't... Oh.
We've got to get on. And please do keep all of your comments and messages coming in on social media about the different topics we've discussed in previous episodes or sketches you'd like us to cover in the future. Anything, really. We love hearing from you. And as always, we'll get stuck into our listener correspondence at the very end of this episode. Right, so how do we want to do this, guys? We're going to try and get through as many of these as we can in, well, I don't know, as long as we feel we can. Do you want to set a time limit or do an order of things or just kind of crack on?
I think you just say when we move on. Okay. You've got to be brutal. I know you can do it, Belle. Come on, you just got to be brutal and say, maybe, and then move on. Or something positive noise.
I think, so the only thing I will say is that when you bring one to the table, it would be great if you say why you found this one surprising, why it fits our theme.
Okay.
Think? Yeah?
Yes.
And then we'll talk about it and move on.
Sounds good.
Who wants to start then?
Jono.
Okay.
Oh, good. Me. Yeah, good. I've been waiting for this. It's a funny one to say. I was thinking, like, picking out ones that surprised me because I did them all. So, it's funny, isn't it? I remember going through the French way of saying surprise yourself, and somebody was explaining all the bits, and he got to je me surpris, and I was like, well, it's funny. You don't often surprise yourself, but
that's
actually,
true.
Yeah, because it's quite hard because you know what you're going to do.
Yeah.
Or you would think so. Anyway, the first one I thought I'd bring to the table was a moon pool. Guys know what a moon pool is? Heard of a moon pool?
Good. No, crack on.
Good. So a moon pool, and you can go check out the sketch of it. I put it as like having a beach underwater. I kind of vaguely remember it from films of my youth. There was one like Cocoon or something like that, where they were basically on an underwater base. But it's a way of having an entrance to the water, like you're getting into a swimming pool, when you are already underwater. Does that make any sense?
For those who have kids, do the octonauts have a moon pool in their base?
They could well do, yeah, absolutely, yeah. So a way to get into the water when you're already in a building, a ship, or in fact, underwater.
Oh, I'm with you. Sorry, can you bring up the sketch so I can see it?
Yeah.
Because I'm recording on my computer. Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
So a moon pool, I remember, and I saw this, a bit of information in the aquarium the first time, where I've actually, like, when you think about it, like, how on earth does this make sense? And you might have all sat in the bath sometimes with, and you get a cup, and you put the cup and you push it down.
Yeah.
And if you keep it perfectly level, you can have an air pocket underwater. And I remember, like, as a kid, you put your finger into this space in the cup.
It was dry.
It's dry, but you're underwater. How is this possible?
Yeah.
Anyway, so it is possible, and not even just having to keep a cup level by using something called a moon pool. And the way they do it, it can be open to the air. So apparently it used to come from, originally came from oil drilling. So they needed to get, you need to be parked in the ocean and you need to get your drilling materials down to the bottom, but you've got a massive storm raging around you, so it's difficult to do. So you basically have a perimeter around your pool, or it can be covered, and then you can go do what you want in this space. But it can also be, and there is actually some underwater bases where they train astronauts, and it sounds a bit crazy, but they're training for extreme environments, right? And it's about as close as you get. So it's underwater, a base sat on the seafloor off Florida, and they have, it's also called a wet porch. So basically you take the room where you're going to get into the water, and you pump up as much air in there as you can to meet the pressure of the water at that depth. And that stops the water from coming up and filling the space, which it would normally do.
Even though it's right there, there's like a hole that would allow you to access it. It's right there.
Exactly. You can just step into the water and it's not going to flood your whole ship. And so they do that by raising the pressure, the air pressure, so much that the water stays out and you can just slip in and out of the water. So you can be off, go do your dive, come back out, stick your head up.
Yeah.
But you're still 60 feet underwater.
That's amazing. Yes, that's very cool.
So anyway, that was a moon pool, and I was thinking, I still think about it now, and I think this is amazing. How cool is that? I'm desperate to go and use a moon pool one day.
Well, when in building bridges, have you heard of caissons?
Yes.
So when you're building the foundations for bridges that are underwater, you need a pressurized container so that people can be there doing their jobs, or you send them down in the gear.
Yeah.
But Victorian times, building lots of bridges, caissons were the way of doing it. And it's about having a pressurized container within which you can move about and access the environment around you, i.e. digging foundations.
Stand at the bottom of the riverbed in the air.
In the dry. Brilliant. Right. Moon pool. Right, so we're going to move on to my first one, which is entitled Tuit Tuu.
Mm.
So this was the fact in nature. So as far as I can remember before seeing this sketch, the noise an owl makes is Tuit Tuu. We all know that. We learned that as kids, right?
No.
Turns out, see? Tommy's seeing it for the first time. Turns out that's not an owl. That's a pair of owls, specifically tawny owls, who would make that tuit tuu sound. Other owls make slightly different kind of screechy noises, but that doesn't matter. The tuit tuu comes from two separate owls, a pair. So I think the female goes tuit and the male goes tuu. And that's what you hear when you hear
so
what you think is an owl.
Is calling a male a twit.
See, it all makes
sense. And the
male
is going back going, to who?
It all makes sense.
Isn't that amazing?
It's nuts.
All the time you think it's one owl, but it's actually two owls.
Are you making this up, Jono? Is that real?
It's real. It's absolutely real.
So what I found incredibly surprising about that is that that's something that I've been assuming. No, that I thought I knew, but I knew it wrong my entire life. But I'm sure I'm not the only one. I'm sure that our parents tell us that when you're learning animals as a kid. Oh, what noise does a pig make? What noise does a cow make? What noise does an owl make? It's probably backed up in primary school. It's backed up throughout your entire life. Kids' books probably go have animations of an owl going twit twoo. It's all wrong. It's a lie.
So if you hear just a twit, you know, it's this poor person that put this. She's
alone. Owl.
It's a female looking for the male. No response.
Rob, as you say, that is very surprising.
Thank you.
And that's crazy. Let's tell my kids that.
Yeah.
They won't believe me.
They'll call you a liar. Tommy.
Right.
This is going really well. Crack on.
Thank you very much. So this is a really unexpected one in the fact that it is better to be interested than be interesting. So in a dinner party or in a formal occasion, when you're meeting new people, it is really weird, but the more you are interested in what someone else has to say, it's been proven that afterwards they will think you are more interesting. So if I, if I'm meeting someone and I start talking about myself and talking about this and talking about that, but if I was like, oh, and you sat, and you kind of drag information out of them, a bit like you always do on your programs, Rob, you're brilliant at doing it when you're interviewing people, they will honestly say that you are more interesting afterwards. And I remember learning this for the first time, and I think it's really difficult to do the younger you are, because when you're younger, you kind of feel that you need to impress people. But honestly, try it. It works brilliantly. And thank you, Jono, for making this into a sketchplanation.
So was that a surprise for you to learn that, kind of, I guess, kind of formally have that explained or set out, not explained, set out?
I think it's just very contradictory. You think that to impress someone, you've got to talk about yourself and how impressive you are and all the stuff that you've done.
Yeah.
Whereas actually possibly the best way to impress someone is to ask them good questions, leading questions about themselves, learn about them, listen to them. And I think you get better at that when you're older, certainly. When you're young, all you want to do is impress people.
Can you imagine in an interview situation where you go in and you think, right, I need to come across as interesting as possible here. So every question they ask me, I'm going to ask one right back at them.
There's possibly situations where that's not the best tactic, and maybe in an interview it's not, but if you can have the opportunity to ask people. But certainly in dinner parties, in conferences, in networking, at university, at school, that sort of stuff probably works really, really well.
I think you're right. John, you've had opportunities for when you've tried to portray yourself as more interesting than perhaps you are by asking lots of questions?
Not possible.
I think as you grow up, you see what you think are interesting people. So you think to be interesting, you have to be as interesting as them. So it's very counterintuitive, I think, to have this the other way around. Yeah. It's probably why I even bothered writing it down, isn't it? It's probably why... What makes anything noteworthy is it sort of surprises you in a way, right? It takes a little gap in your knowledge and goes, oh.
Do you remember where that research came from?
Well, the one I was quoting was not research. It was from a book from Charles... It's actually from Charles Saatchi. He was the one, and actually I think it was advice from his wife, Nigella Dawson.
Yeah.
So it is. But there is also all sorts of research around this as a phenomenon. But that's where I learned it.
Mm. I think Carnegie talks about it, doesn't he, in How to Win Friends and Influence People.
He does that.
That we're quoting for the second or third time.
Yeah.
It's good.
Like a 100-year-old book, isn't it?
It's quite
old. Is it?
Yeah.
Is it
old? It's like really, really old. It's quite difficult to get in print. You have to find like old copies of it.
I always assumed it was a fairly contemporary book from like 80s, 90s.
I think it's...
No.
Yeah.
No.
That in itself, I find surprising.
There we go. Next.
Right, Jono, back round to you.
Okay, cool. So one I really like and sort of blew my mind when I was first shared it. I was shared an article by a really good friend, and it's all about ordering adjectives. And actually, it's still remarkable. So basically, the idea is that English adjectives almost always follow a set order when you say them in a row. And so I'll give a little example, as I put in the description, which was, compare, for example, a super little Italian coffee to an Italian little super coffee.
Yeah.
And they're just totally different things. And one of them sounds weird and, a bit strange, and the other one just sounds completely natural. Or another one was, this was from a book called The Elements of Eloquence, is that you can have a great green dragon but not a green great one. And you're like, what? That doesn't make it.
It's the same words.
It's the same words, and green and great. But great green sounds natural, and green great sounds bizarre.
Yeah.
But if you were learning English, how do you string these all together? So,
how do you teach that? Is there something?
Well, so the order, apparently, this was my example for the sketch, was a terrific, giant, old, circular, grey Scottish stone throwing toy. Which is, so I've got some guys throwing a giant stone, frisbee.
You've got to look at the sketch for this one.
So the thing is, it goes opinion, which is, I think this is terrific, size, giant, age, old, shape, circular, colour, grey, origin, Scottish, material, stone, purpose, throwing, and then your noun. And so the adjectives, we naturally, without thinking about it, put them in this order when we string adjectives together. I can just see Tom's face here. He's like, no
what?
Way.
What?
And the order again is opinion, size, age, shape, colour, origin, material, purpose. Now, when you're describing something with adjectives, you don't have to use all of them. But if you are using more than one, naturally in English, that is the order in which you will go through them. So yeah. I found this astounding when I saw your sketch, however long ago that was, because it's something that I've been doing without knowing, and I had no idea there was a... I don't know, is it a grammatical rule, or is it just
culture?
Yeah, I don't know, but it's amazing that we've all got this ingrained within us, and that if you hear it another way, it sounds completely wrong.
So, if I was an example, Tom, of the material and the purpose. So, if you went a plastic cricket bat, or you went a cricket plastic bat,
yeah,
you're like,
it's horrific.
Yeah. Yeah, completely different, isn't it? Completely different. But anyway, so apparently we're all doing this all the time.
And a plastic big cricket bat. Yeah, a big plastic cricket. What?
This great
when did we
yellow
learn this?
Recording room we're sat in, or this yellow recording great room. What?
And we will automatically just do that.
We do. You
guys it must happen
do
all the time.
Do the French do this as well?
Probably.
They will.
Is it a Latin thing then?
Do you know?
I don't know.
We'll think of a French, a big brown, different colour. I know, but then I'll translate it.
Do the cricket bat.
A big red book. Mm-hmm. Un grand. No, but no, because French is different. Because un grand livre rouge. I don't know where you'd put red in that. Un grand livre.
Oh. Well, it's after the grand. You keep putting that first.
Yeah, so sizes in there.
We need to go study some other languages.
I don't know in French. I don't know. It's just nuts, isn't it?
That is completely nuts.
So I'm going to move us on to my second one, which is a blout reduplication. Is that right? A blout? A blout?
Excuse me?
I would say ablout, but I don't know.
Ablout.
Ablout.
Right. It links very much to what we've just been talking about. Ablaut reduplication, and I had to write this down to try and keep it as simple as possible, is a pattern in the English language where we can have a term that repeats the same word apart from one vowel within those words that changes. And there's an order in which the vowel will change. Right, so the example is, and this is where I'll hopefully stop talking gobbledygook, an example I've got is splish, splash, splosh from the sketch. So you've got the same formation of the word, S-P-L-I-S-H, splish, but then in the next one, you change it to an A, splash, and then splosh. And where you have those kinds of things, like with zigzag or hip-hop, all in the sketch, you will go from I to A to O, and you will change them in that order. Now, you don't always have all of them in there, but one thing I did notice is that they always start with an I. So you've got things like flip-flop, tick-tock, crisscross, jibber-jabber, ding-dong, chit-chat, dilly-dally, zigzag, tip-top, riff-raff, ping-pong, sing-song. They all start with the I, and they will either move to an A or an O.
So it was never going to be toc-tick?
No. Or and it wouldn't be...
Zag-zig.
Zag-zig. Or dally-dilly.
But it could be tack-tock. Yeah.
What? Tack-tock?
You don't often have those, though. Yeah, it always starts
with
the
yes.
I. As in for TikTok. Is that why it's like iPad? Toxic.
No, because that's not a reduplication of the word, right? So it's where you've got the same... word.
Pod. Oh, okay, yeah.
So it'd be PidPad.
APID.
But I was really trying to find one that didn't start with an I.
Yeah, they pretty much all do.
Yeah. But the splish, splash, splosh is a lovely one because it's got all three of them in that order.
What happened to the
absolutely.
U?
Absolutely.
Because they're all the vowels.
We just don't do it. Yeah, we just don't do it.
Hush, push, pish, pish.
Does the Y come in as an I sometimes? My pie.
Maybe.
I can't think of many examples.
No, it's not about rhyming. It's about that.
Oh,
all
about the
letters are
the
same.
Words.
Look, zigzag.
Oh, it doesn't rhyme.
Z and G are exactly the same. Z and G. So you're replicating everything in that word, apart from that one vowel.
Okay, so pad thai is not that.
Not at all, because pad is a completely different word to thai.
It's also a different language. I love the way your mind works.
Again, as with sketch formations, time and again, look at the sketch, you'll get it straight away.
And then
but
like,
it's absolutely fascinating that all this stuff's going on in our minds without knowing about it. We're subconsciously doing all this. That's again, was a surprise for me.
Our culture, our life has meant that we know this.
All
we don't
this
know.
Hidden stuff. Yeah, I've just put it out there. A few people have pointed out to me because there wasn't like any particularly agreed upon obvious explanation for this, except for perhaps that as you make the sounds, and you can try it, zig. Zag, zog.
Yeah.
The it goes sort of from the back of your throat, back of your mouth to the front. And so when you end in a zog, your lips are sort of pursed at the front. And it's a bit weird to go back, zog, zig.
Yes, because you have to breathe in at the beginning. So
So it could be that it's just the natural way that our mouths go as we're making these sounds.
It feels like you use less energy, less muscle to go from the back to the front of your mouth when you're speaking than from the front to the back.
Because to say something, you've got to breathe in first and then exhale to say it.
So that I'll bring in a quick example from French there. Aero, as in aeroplane, which we'd say in English. The French pronounce the A, then the E, and then the O. Aero. So you go, start kind of in the middle, right to the back, aero. So there's all sorts of movement going on with where you're saying that word from in your mouth, and it's quite hard to get your mouth around that if you're an English speaker. I found anyway.
Let's see, you're doing the aero.
You're doing a big old loop. Whereas this is very much linear from the back to the front. I like that explanation.
Could be.
Talking about very surprising things. Bright light to free your sneeze.
Oh yeah.
My dad does this a lot because he goes. And then he has to look, and my sister's the same. They have to look at a bright light, and then they'll either sneeze or they won't sneeze.
Yeah.
Why is that, Johnny? What has light got to do with sneezing?
Well, I'm glad you asked this, because I didn't know, and I wrote to Science Focus magazine, because they had this Q&A, where you ask these scientists, and they'll go for answer all your questions.
Brilliant. Yes.
And I said, why is it that if I've got a sneeze coming, I can look at a bright light and it comes out? And they said, that's very interesting. It's called the photic sneeze, which I guess photic from light, and nobody really knows why it happens. But it's there every single day. If you're about to sneeze, well, actually, it might not be everybody.
Yeah.
But if you look at a bright light, for me, it will help me get the sneeze out.
Yeah.
And sometimes if I go out into a bright environment, suddenly I'm really sneezy.
That happens.
It's all like, oh. Like
when our kids wake up in the morning, they'll often come out of the bedroom and sneeze as the light hits them. Isn't that funny?
Wow.
Yeah. Anyway, the photic sneeze, but there wasn't any clear explanation as to why this happens.
I think I've just kind of worked this out through life and through sneezing. When you've got a sneeze there, I've just discovered that by looking at bright light, you did it.
Yeah.
So I was aware of this, but I don't think I'd ever kind of consciously talked about it or spoken to others or even asked for a scientific explanation, turns out there isn't one, as far as we know.
Yeah, as far as I know.
I love stuff like that. Maybe the surprise for me is that, as far as we know, there is no scientific explanation, because it really feels like there
must be.
There must
be. Someone must have worked this out.
Everything's linked. There's an explanation for everything, isn't there?
It is odd, isn't it? Looking, like letting bright light come into your eyes should make you sneeze. Like, why?
Can I add to this? I think it's about looking up to bright light, in my personal experience as well. So instead of crooking your neck back to look up at it, if you kind of roll your eyeballs up, I think that helps me bring out a sneeze as well.
Yeah, nice.
So is it all connected in there? Because the eyes aren't totally round. I wonder if they, like, doing it. Oh, I don't know.
Isn't it? I feel like it's muscles, like pulling your sneeze switch or something.
We could just make up reasons.
Well, we'll start publishing it.
Exactly. Well, can I do a related one then?
Yeah.
And a lot of these are old ones where the sketches may be more or less high.
Don't excuse yourself. Listen, Johnny, you started out as a little kind of pet project
just
of fun.
It for myself. Yeah, there we go. all right, so this one, actually genuinely quite a good tip. And again, a lot of these were surprising to me because I only learned them when I was, like, you know, in my 30s and onwards.
Yeah.
This one I learned from a film, but it's basically, if you want to keep your night vision at night, let's say you're getting up to go for a pee in the night.
Yeah. Which becomes increasingly frequent.
Potentially. And you need to turn the light on, but you don't want to, you know, crash into stuff on your way back. If you shut just one eye, you keep the night vision in the one eye while sacrificing the other eye to get the bright light. So one of your pupils can stay go really small and the other people will stay really big, and it really works. You turn the light off, switch eyes, and you're all right again.
So then you won't bump into the bed on your way back into the dark room, because you then flip the eyes around.
Flip the eyes around.
Yeah.
If you want to sneeze, Can you just do two eyes? Or can you just do one? If you do one, do you just sneeze out of one side? Is that...
And wake up everyone else in the house. I discovered that through your... Well, I learned it through Sketchmanations. I'd never thought about that before.
Well, I saw it in a film. It was a war film. And they were like crawling through no man's land. And somebody set up like a shot up a big flare.
Yeah.
And they're like, shut one eye so that when the flare goes, you can still operate.
Oh, that's good.
It's quite important then.
Yeah.
I mean, it helps going for a pee in the night.
We're all there.
If you're in no man's land, try we'll sat here with one eye closed, testing it.
I mean, if we're talking about tips for going for a wee in the middle of the night, I mean, the sit down wee is such a great discovery.
Well, for me, it's a discovery.
For me, it's been. I just feel so liberated. It's amazing. I mean, that is my preferred way now.
Should we move on?
It's good that. Right. How are we doing? All right, we're smashing through them, actually, guys. This is good. Next one I wanted to bring up was this one called 1.5 billion heartbeats. Right, so this is the phenomena in nature that roughly whatever the expected lifespan and whatever the typical size, for almost all mammals, 1.5 billion heartbeats is more or less what you get in your lifetime. So the sketch shows the scale from the teeniest of mammals, like the shrew, that Jono's got there in the sketch, right through to a massive, great big elephant. And even though the shrew will live for roughly 2 years and the elephant will live for around 75 years, give or take, they'll both have in the region of 1.5 billion heartbeats throughout their lifetime.
It's sort of like almost intuitive. You think of like little creatures as, you know, living fast, dying young.
Yeah.
And old creatures or going, being big.
Yes.
And going slowly.
Yeah.
And so in that sense, it's kind of intuitive, isn't it? Elephants don't really do anything.
Yeah, they're
fast.
Slow movers. I mean, they can run, but you don't see it often, right?
Yeah. And the smaller you get, apart from, I don't know, a sloth or something.
Yeah.
They're going faster and faster, and like then, yeah, and having young really quick and all that stuff.
I think the word we're looking for in the realm of those tiny mammals is scurrying.
Scurrying, exactly. Scurrying in and out, yeah.
Yeah?
All the time. Their hearts are going boom, 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 boom. And I think if you've young kids as well, like their hearts, if you've listened to their hearts, it's just like, it's amazing how much faster they're going compared to adults.
And this is what it comes down to, right? So even there's a massive difference in the time scale for something small and something big, typically, 2 years for the shrew, 75 years for the elephant, it's the fact that on average their heart rates will be very, very different. So a shrew, I think, John, typically in the sketch you talk about a heart rate of 1500 BPM, beats per minute, versus an elephant, which would be about 30 beats per minute. Very different. So then when you combine those heart rates and the length of life, roughly you're looking at 1.5 billion heartbeats. And that applies to us as mammals as well, or does it? Because I think you also talk about in the sketch, Jono, that humans are becoming a bit of an outlier because there's so much that goes into healthcare now. So we live for longer. So
yeah,
we'll have more heartbeats.
Sort of artificially, compared to if we were just mammals living in nature.
Yeah.
Cheated.
Increased our lifespan. But you can think about, you know, like, whales are mammals. And, you know, the blue whale, that stat about having a heart the size of a car.
Yeah.
And certainly not going at 1,500 beats per minute, is it? And yet they live a really long time.
Yeah.
Big whales do. And so, yeah, is it just sort of remarkable, this thing that ties us together? Tom's still processing this.
So what I'm trying to work out is, A, if you're just winding me up on this point.
It's a sketch.
Is therefore, because you guys do a lot of exercise.
Right, yeah, good. Right? I'm glad to bring this up.
And so really burn through your... beats.
Well, this is a concern.
So when you're going for a marathon, do you think, oh, I could well be taking a couple of years off here?
Well, it's more when we do things like hill sprints, where I'm hitting my max heart rate, and you're going, oh, is this a good idea?
Taking hours off our lives.
Yeah.
Sprinting up this hill.
But then apparently the fitter you,
apparently
not the fitter you are, but, you know, fit people typically last a bit longer.
Think it keeps you healthy.
Here's the outlier.
I hope.
Maybe this is part of that outlier. So whilst there's all the development and research gone into medical ways of helping us live longer, the fact that we're consciously trying to be fit to last longer as well. Is that why we try and be fit? I don't know.
It's quality of life, isn't it?
You want quality of life.
We want to have an extended quality of life. We don't all want to be vegetables sitting around till we're 150. We want to just have this longer period of time where we can do fun stuff.
Whereas other mammals aren't necessarily thinking that way.
they're mainly trying to survive.
TV
or...
Yeah. When dogs are running around in the park, they're not thinking like, I deserve a bit of extra dinner
dogs,
tonight.
Dogs are definitely fun scale, aren't they?
Yeah.
That's how they live their life.
All tight one.
Yeah, so there you go. So another little add-on to that is that if you want to calculate your maximum heart rate,
yes,
you can take, it's 220 minus your age, there or thereabouts. 220 beats per minute minus your age. So your maximum heart rate does get lower the older you get.
Yeah, which cycling with you, Jono, a couple of weekends ago was slightly terrifying me because I kept on hitting like 190, 200 on the
thing. Really?
Yeah.
You should.
I've got
and it's your birthday today.
Yeah, well, so I should be on like 176.
Have you been lying? Are you actually 20?
I'd love it to be that way around. Or I've just got a dangerously high heart rate.
Right, move on.
Right. So this one really, really changed my life. I learnt it from, do you know who is it?
Marie Kondo.
Thank you very much. Stack shirts vertically. And joy, and that's, so I'm going to bludgeon this. But have a look at the sketch. Stacking shirts, especially T-shirts, you fold them in this way, and then you can stack them vertically, and you get so much more.
Like in your drawer.
Drawer, in a small space, and then you can really clearly see every single one of them. So when I was young, I was very much a grab the laundry, stuff it in the drawer.
This is your ongoing hate of dealing with laundry.
Exactly. And I think it's now 5 years ago, someone was talking about this book, I listened to it, and I've done this method ever since, and I love it, and my drawers are really, really neat, and it sort of fills me with joy when I open it and go, oh, look how neat that is. It takes a bit of time, but also you get so much more in, and you can see all the different, in my case mainly all white T-shirts that I wear, and so it's very clear. I know I'm wearing a black, it's my birthday, so I'm wearing a black one.
Have a day off.
Yeah, day off.
So for me, this is exactly why I have to do this project, because I have to teach people about these things which have been amazing and transformative for me. Yeah. I know that this is only stacking shirts, but I learned this from my wife years ago when, you know, for years and years and years, I'd just been putting shirts on top of each other and pulling one out the bottom, and they just completely mess up the whole pile. And it was such a simple change to turn the shirts by 90 degrees.
And it really works.
And it transforms things, and it really works. And so, yeah, people need to know this stuff.
I do this as well now because you told me about it, because Maria told you about it. So now I like thinking about it as like flicking through files in a filing cabinet.
Yeah.
You're like, I'm going to go with that one. And, you know, it's been noticed and I've had the Mickey taken out of me for it, but I love it.
Are yours colour coordinated?
No.
Because I think Maria's are.
A little bit.
Yeah.
It's like a little bookshelf, isn't it? Mm. It's a little bookshelf of T-shirts or something.
Yeah.
Marie Kondo has a thing, which is, I've not done a sketch of, but it's an interesting one, where she talks about the colours. This is about hanging shirts and stuff. And so she says, I think it's white on the right. And so start from a dark colour on the left and gradually get lighter to the right. And she doesn't really provide any explanation as to why this feels good, but she says, try it. You'll find that it feels good. So I've been sort of doing that with my shirt to try and determine whether it actually feels better, but it's a bit of an effort to keep it in sync.
Who is Marie Kondo?
She became famous for basically teaching people how to tidy and how to declutter.
It's brilliant. Netflix series of things.
She has all sorts of stuff.
It's actually awesome to watch. And really, like Sarah and I have done it a couple of times through the house of just getting rid of stuff, decluttering stuff, and it's so liberating. It's quite hard work, but it's really liberating.
Yeah, but you know, when you do a clear out,
yeah,
it does feel good, doesn't it?
Really.
This is very much along those lines. It's about being more efficient, and I sometimes feel it creates more space in the drawers as well.
Yeah, you feel like you've got a bigger house.
Yeah, great.
There are some other slightly curious recommendations she has where, like,
yeah, come on,
make sure your clothes don't feel the stress. So, for example, instead of taking your socks and folding them over each other.
Yeah.
Just lay them flat, gently fold on top of each other, next to each other.
Into a little sort of ball.
And they'll appreciate it. Interesting recommendations like that. There is actually another sketch which was exactly her thing, which was when you're like clearing out or deciding if you need something in your life, ask yourself this question: does this spark joy?
Yes.
And if it doesn't spark joy, time to move it on. And if it does, you're surrounding yourself with all the things that spark joy in your life, which is nice. I think that's nice.
Rather than shoving things in a bag and putting them in the attic.
Exactly.
That's another way to do it.
And you kind of, she recommends to sort of hold it in both hands and sort of
feel really it. Examine it, look at it, feel it.
And there's a lot of mistake because of that. Yeah. So a lot of people know her as either the shirt folding lady or the does it bring you joy lady sort of stuff. But it's actually really worth taking on and trying it.
Try it.
Should we move on?
One more each?
Yes.
Yeah, quick fire round?
Quick fire. All right, my quick fire one, surprising things. This one we learned when we were travelling in South Africa and we stayed at a little pub in the middle of nowhere and they had a pizza called a Wayne's World pizza. And the pizza flavour is jalapeno, anchovy and banana.
What?
Those are surprising ingredients for me for a pizza.
And I did a sketch of it because it's random. And actually partly because also I just think that people, recipes would benefit from being more visual. And so I actually think there's something like, I was going to do visual recipe maps, you know, basically when it's all coming together. But anyway, jalapeno, anchovy and banana. I think it's amazing. You got spicy and you got salty and you got sweet all in one. So it has all those three magic flavours. It sounds ridiculous. Yeah. I get it. But maybe give it a try.
Why is it called Wayne's World Pizza? Is it a reference to Wayne's World, the movie?
Film.
And they order that?
That's a good question. I'd have to go watch the film again.
Is the banana cooked? Presume so.
Yeah, you stick it on.
So it's not like cold banana you put on afterwards. No, it's...
I know.
I'm reluctant to try it. But
no, you feel like you're just going to ruin a pizza.
That's the point, isn't it?
That's why I put it out there as a surprising one.
Hey! Surprise! And what do you want? Do you want all your food to be predictable? That's boring. Surprise yourself.
Yeah. Surprise someone else.
Surprise someone else.
Put them underneath the cheese.
Hey, babe, should we get pizza tonight? Yeah, leave with me. I'll order it. Right. Yeah.
This
is going to sound strange, but... Yeah. And some people got a problem with pineapple.
Well, it's similar principle.
My final contribution to the quick fire round is one of Jono's sketches called Enjoy Your Hotel Room More. And the sketch, and so what Jono suggests is that you should bounce on the bed, you should take a long bath, and you should walk around naked. And I spend quite a bit of time in hotels when I'm away with work.
Yeah.
And they don't tend to be fancy hotels, they're just your kind of standard plain room. And I can absolutely relate to all three of those suggestions. I think they're absolutely brilliant. But the reason why I included this as surprising is something that I love about the sketch that I noticed when I took a closer look when I was skizzing through, is that there's a bum.
At the bottom.
Jono's included an arse in one of his sketches of the guy running around naked. And that was the surprise to me. And I loved it. I absolutely loved it. And I will continue to do all three of those things when I spend time in hotel rooms, because I think it's brilliant.
Bounce on the bed. I was interested to know where you were going to go here with Enjoy Your Hotel Room at first.
And I was trying to think of anything else that I might add to that. But I don't think there was.
Nope.
I don't think there's anything. That's it?
That's it. That's all we need.
Tommy, round us off.
Round
one final set. You stop looking at the bum.
It's related, I suppose. That person in the sketch, he would have been using both sides of the towel, because he's Jono, probably. And is it yourself you're drawing there? Which
it's a nice bum. It is a nice bum.
So when you're using a towel, you often come out and you're really wet, and then you get the towel wet, and you never think that the other side of the towel is completely dry. So once you sort of dry yourself a bit, turn it over, and then you have a nice warm dry towel. Continue drying yourself.
Or at least drier.
Drier. Is it always completely dry, Jono?
It's definitely drier.
Yeah.
It's definitely drier. It is genuinely a really simple, easy thing. Dry yourself on one side of the towel and then turn it around and wrap the dry side around you if you want to wear it around your waist or something. Mm. There you go.
Feels much nicer.
It's another one of those ones where I know it's so ridiculous. It's just so long ago. And yet, it was literally decades before I kind of twigged that there are two separate sides to a towel, which, you know, how is that possible? And you can use them differently. It's good.
Dry yourself, wrap yourself.
And so I get the surprising element of this is that it's things that possibly so obvious. They're obvious when they're pointed out to you, but up to that point, you just don't think of it.
Well, they were,
or maybe
me.
You do.
Yeah, I mean, everybody listening might be like, oh, yeah, of course.
God, I've been doing that for years.
What are you talking about? But anyway, they were new to me at the time.
Is that it? Have we gone round?
We've gone round.
Well done. Well done. How many have we covered there? What did we do? 4 each? 12?
I think so.
12 quickfire sketches, guys. There you go. What do we think of the bumper pack quickfire episodes?
It was really good fun.
Do they work?
I like it. It's a chance to actually share a lot of the little ones, which is still good. I quite like them.
I love them all.
I'm talking about the ideas here are good. I like.
Yeah, well, I like the sketches as well.
Oh, good.
I mean, I keep coming back to the bum. I really like the sketches. I think there's possibly scope for future quickfire episodes, do you think? Along different themes.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we've got plenty to go through.
Yeah, we do. And to your point ages ago, Tommy, this is perhaps a way of catching up with Jono a little bit.
Yeah.
And trying to catch up with the number of sketches he's done.
Get him to go quicker.
Yeah. Well, him to slow down and us to go quicker. Any favourites in there?
Like, Twit Twoo is still possibly the most surprising.
Are you still
me.
Questioning that one?
I'm still really questioning.
He doesn't believe it.
So this is what I love about Sketchmanations. You learn and it makes you think about things completely differently.
The 1.5 billion heartbeats, that feels a bit of a downer.
It's quite a lot.
Yeah, so billion, remember, not million. Well, we hope you, our beloved listeners, have found some, if not all of the sketches we've covered here, to have an element of surprise about them. Facts and tips you can share and impress your friends with, perhaps. I mean, use them sparingly. Nobody likes a smarty pants. Have fun with it. Go on then, off you go. Thank you all very much for listening. We're 10 episodes in now, and you know what? I think we really quite enjoy doing this. We'd love for you to try and help us spread the word about the podcast as well, online, on social media, or by just bringing it up in the pub or at a family dinner. That would be brilliant. Thank you. Don't forget to subscribe to the series if you haven't already. And please do get in touch with any comments or messages or some of your own stories about any of the topics we've covered in the series so far. Hello@sketchplanations.com is the only email address you'll need. We'll be dipping into this week's postbag in just a few moments at the end of the episode. But next week, we'll be back to the standard single sketch format, where we'll be exploring Goodhart's Law. You can look it up in advance or wait for next week, where we'll get right into what it is and how it affects our lives. Until then, go well, stay well. Cheers.
Goodbye. Bye.
See ya.
Right, well, let's get into this week's postbag, which is a reflection on last week's episode, Front Stage versus Backstage Behaviour. And we've had even more than usual correspondence on this. It's fantastic. So thank you, everyone, for commenting or sending us an emails or messages. But we're going to crack on because there's a few to get through. I'll read out the first one. This is from Richard on Instagram, who says, this was really fascinating, especially the notion of keeping things in when we're observing others in a public setting. I have a great friend with whom I have a completely simpatico relationship. When we're out and see or hear something off the wall, we just have to look at each other to know we're thinking the exact same thing and have to immediately break eye contact or we'll start to laugh. Yeah, and I guess
that's a good relationship to have.
That is keeping in. And it's lovely, isn't it? And you both know you're keeping in your backstage behaviour, keeping a very front stage.
Hopefully it's that way around.
Yes. Yeah. So, but the brilliant thing is about it that you can go backstage later and have a right old laugh about whatever it was. Thank you very much, Richard. Toby messages to say, another good podcast. When I was listening, I thought the problem I sometimes have is working out if the situation requires backstage or front stage, e.g. with other parents at school. Should you try to be a bit reserved and not show your hand straight away or just be yourself? I pass this one over to you boys as parents who have obviously met a lot of people, a lot of maybe now close friends through the schools that you send your kids to.
It's very meta, isn't it? Trying to decide if you need to be backstage or front stage. I think you be yourself. Be yourself. It's a good environment. You be yourself. You're not. It's no interview, is it?
Not too much of yourself, Johnny.
Yeah.
What is the pressure? What is the situation? Are there any pressures at the school gate about you as a parent in front of other parents? Because that's what's brought you there, right?
I feel like as a parent, there's probably always like a little bit in the back of your mind about being a good parent, and maybe a little bit about how others perceive your parenting.
Yeah,
but you know, we're all friends. We all get chance. It's a great chance to get on the level with people, isn't it? It's hard for everybody. So.
My kids have recently changed school, and so I'm meeting a whole load of new parents quite rapidly. Having known the previous school parents really well, known people for almost 10 years, some of them, and now at a new school where it's new relationships, new beginnings, and it is a little bit. I certainly feel Toby's pain, as you never quite know where to gauge it. We were at prize giving on this Saturday, and that was very front stage because everyone was also really, really dressed up. It's like being back at school. It is very, in some respects, because you are in a school environment, so you feel almost yourself as you're back at school, and you're trying not to kind of embarrass your kids in some respects.
But is that a conscious thing? Were you, it sounds like you were quite conscious of that, Tom, at this event last week?
A little bit, because there's hundreds of parents for that one. And you've met people a few times, you're trying to remember everybody's names and not mess that up I understand what Toby's saying for sure.
Johnny, do you want to take one?
I'll just go. We had a really nice email from Jez saying that front stage, backstage is really interesting, particularly in a work context. And he shared the term spillage when a bit of backstage or real life accidentally comes out at work when the professional mask slips. But also that he thinks a small bit of spillage is good, as it shows who we really are and that we're human, particularly if you're in a leadership position, although it's worth avoiding the career limiting spillage, should it get close to that. Totally resonant. I really like it, actually. It's the sort of thing where it's the sort of thing that happens, like when the dog barks in the background or the cat walks across the keyboard. It's like a bit of real life comes into work context is really nice. I think it's a funny metaphor, isn't it? Spillage. It sort of,
I like it.
Intuitively makes sense, but it sort of has this idea that your backstage is sort of bottled up, a bit spilled out to the top.
It's got nowhere to go. It's got to go somewhere. Yeah, it's spilt in the office. I mean, I've definitely, there's a very clear example I have of this when I did work in an office environment, and I'd been away on like a 2-week holiday with the boys, and you come and you've been playing drinking games a lot of the time. This was, you know, decades ago, and with drinking, you know, there were things like double tap your glass when you've finished your drink on the table, or no pointing. So you either point with a fist or with a kind of crooked finger, and you end up doing presentations with like pointing at the screen with a fist or with a crooked finger because there's no pointing. Or you double tap your coffee mug when you finish it on your desk. Just weird, silly things that spill out. That spillage resonated.
If you had Richard Simpatico relationship, somebody else in the office, it would crack you up, wouldn't it, when you double tap your coffee in the morning?
Or if you don't, and then someone goes, right, neck it. Yeah, that was a nice one. I like that. That's a great observation. Love that. That was from Jez, was it?
Yeah.
Thank you, Jez. That's lovely. Got another comment left on Instagram from Lady Nana of Meme. So they say, in corporate life, I had to look like I fit in, as I should have. As soon as I retired, I shaved my head. My hair was thick and beautiful, but very hot, so it was mostly in a ponytail. Now I wear jeans, shorts and Joe Boxer lounge pants. I always thought I'd be a classy, well-dressed senior citizen. That's not me. I'm free to be me. I've joined our Readers Theatre Group and love performing. My first role, I put on a wig, glasses and used a southern drawl. No one recognised me. At the final bow, I took off my glasses, yanked off my wig. The audience of residents exploded. The real me had finally and unapologetically arrived. I'm not a classy grandmother. I'm wild and wacky and finally me. What a lovely, lovely message.
That's lovely.
That's beautiful.
That is exactly what we're talking about.
It's a great opportunity for a fresh start again, isn't it?
Hey, yeah. And this, I'm obviously just reading this in very 2D text because it was left as a comment. But what I read into that is this joy of talking about who she is now. Because why can't we do that? Why can't we experience that joy more in what a traditional front stage environment? Why not bring a bit more back into it?
Great question.
We have a mutual friend who does this, and I notice it quite a bit. And I love it when he does it. Let's say we're going into a shop or, I don't know, a cafe or a restaurant or something. So there's a stranger there who doesn't know us, and you're going to go into your front stage behaviour. He will chuck in backstage behaviour, just in the way he acts and the language he uses, the kind of chat that you'd have if it was just amongst us. And it always makes me laugh, and it always takes me by surprise. And that stranger, whoever it is as well, usually they react really well to it because it makes them laugh as well. Sometimes they're a bit bemused, but I love it when he does it. I absolutely love it. And I don't think he does it consciously, but as soon as he sees other people laugh, right, he's like, oh yeah, I see what I've done there. I love it.
It's a great way to connect, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, isn't it? Yeah. It is.
Love that.
Step out of the, I don't know, I was going to say the clothing that we all put on, but don't do that.
That's step not off the stage.
Thank you. That's a much more appropriate metaphor. Thank you for all of those messages and comments. And, of course, keep them coming in. We'll be back with you next week. Till then, cheerio. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Later. Music on this podcast series is sourced from the very talented Frank Cinelli. And you can find loads more tracks at frankcinelli.com.